My goal here is to just expose to you some of the broad brushes of strategizing for a mass media communication effort. If we know the problem, and the problem is there's misconceptions and misunderstandings and increasing negative attitudes among parents with respect to vaccination, how can we use mass media to alleviate this problem? This is the way we generally think about the use of media. You can use media to directly communicate with consumers, mothers, fathers, the direct decision makers. You can use media to affect policy. And as I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know what kind of policies you'd want to affect, since actually policies are, very much in our favor at this moment. But you use media to affect policymakers, and they would change the environment that would make it more conducive for the general public to think or do what you would want. Or you could use intermediaries and opinion leaders, people that parents trust. We do a lot of this with the medical community. Very good intervention, but there may be other parenting opinion leaders. We talk a lot about, especially new younger parents are into the wired world, Web 2.0. There's a lot of opinion leaders out there on the internet who you might want to influence so that they would communicate with parents. And I think this is something we need to think about too. So, as you're thinking about what's the problem and what's the best way to approach it, there are different ways to go at it. And then, I keep changing this slide every time I do it because the media environment is getting increasingly fractured. I mean, when I got into this business, you have print and you got radio and you got TV, and, TV was a couple of networks and local stations. I mean, it's all up for grabs now. I mean, and it changes daily, hourly. In addition to the big media conglomerates, you've got smaller targeted media. You got online. You got print. You got print that's also online. You've got syndicated programs. You've got media outlets that are targeting a specific racial or ethnic group. You've got media outlets that are targeting a particular demographic or any kind of audience segmentation you can think of, like Cafe Mom, mommy blogs. That now there's blogs for physicians and for nurses, and they exchange stories on there. The options are endless. In one way, it's daunting for those of us trying to come up with a strategy. Where do I begin? There's so many choices. But in another way, it's a real opportunity because of the way you can target and piggyback onto the already established authority of the media outlet or the person behind the blog to carry your message. And with some thought about what your message is and how you want to carry it, you can really take advantage of this fractured media environment. And this quote I love. I think more and more today, if you're not in the media, you don't exist. I mean, as a social event, if you are not in the media and controlling your message, then you're in trouble. And increasingly with the vaccination issue, we're getting in trouble because the people who are, trying to coax people not to vaccinate are increasingly controlling the media environment and are getting people's attention for a lot of good reasons that I'm sure Sandy is going to touch on. So if you want to be in the media, these are the, if you're looking at big categories of different kinds of media channels, you've got your video, which used to be just broadcast, but now you've got cable, and you've got a mix of terrestrial, and you've got online video and video streaming sites. You've got radio and various audio delivery. The difference between audio only and audio plus video can't be underestimated, especially in terms of this issue. Imagine what if you've seen the famous Jenny McCarthy interview on Oprah. Imagine how less moving that would have been if it were audio only. I mean, a video is a very emotive medium. And if you're not using that, which unfortunately we in public health are not using the emotion content of video to its fullest extent, you're going to die because people are going to look at you and you say, you look like a piece of plywood. Why should I trust you? You're not empathizing with me because they're so used to the emotive content in video, and it's very important. But nevertheless, your audio only has a lot of advantages. It is more portable. You can multitask with it. It tends to be more newsworthy. There's a lot of opportunities for getting your message in during morning drive time and things like that. Print, although wherever you turn, print outlets are increasingly going online or they're dying. Print still has a big role in content generation because if I read the Washington Post in the morning and then I drive to work and listen to the radio, it's funny because I'm hearing the same stories over again. Why? Because the people on the radio are reading from the Washington Post. In any city, it's going to be like that. That a lot of the content originates in print and then it's repurposed in other media. And increasingly, the smart print outlets have figured that out and are doing it on their own instead of letting other people do it. And of course, the interactive media, I mean, there's endless things that we could say about that. Sandy's going to say more about it. It's more intimate. It's more targeted. It's incredibly immediate. There's a huge variety of venues. And there's the ability to get the message out in a way that's 10 years ago was unconscionable. We're going to cover different types of interviews, live and recorded interviews. There are different considerations for each and for the media, but I don't want to steal Sandy's thunder. I do want to talk briefly about the different kinds of ways to get into the media, one being news and having your immunization story be newsworthy. And a perfect example of that is this settlement case was incredibly newsworthy, and the people in the advocacy organizations did a masterful job of making this newsworthy because government admits the link between vaccines and autism. I mean, what could be a better tagline than that? Whether it's true or not, it gets a lot of notice. So when you're thinking about trying to get into the news, and a lot of vaccine news is newsworthy, and we're going to give more examples of it later, but think about, is it timely? Is it something that relates to today that people are going to be concerned about today? Is it something that people are discussing? Is it on the radar screen? Is it relate to the general issues of today and the things that people are concerned about? From 2001 until even today, national security is a big issue. Previously, it might have been crime, or it might have been bioterrorism, can you piggyback on a current issue that's already important? Vaccination is important to school standards because of X. Does it affect a large number of people? Can you put a local angle on it? Can you make it emotional? There's nothing that makes a news story more interesting than, the old saying, if it bleeds, it leads, is true, but if it's personal and involves a personality that people care about, it leads to. If you're not going for a newsworthy thing, you could go the feature angle where it would be a human interest story, something would be in a different section of the paper or in a different medium. And then there's also if you can get your media outlet, we think of this traditionally for print outlets, but for other outlets, to accept it as their policy, they want to take a side on the vaccine safety issue. There have been a lot of media outlets who have done that recently, that they want to take a side and, you've heard this, you've heard that, but the Washington Post says this. And that can be very beneficial because there are a lot of people who read such articles and are persuaded because they trust the people at the Washington Post or Science Magazine or what have you. Let me skip over that. Let me talk briefly about the difference between earned and unearned media. And if you're not familiar with these terms, earned media is the kind of media exposure you don't pay for. So if you think of earned media, you think of getting on Larry King Live, getting into the 6 o'clock news, getting into the story on the front page of the newspaper, or pitching a story to an important website. That's earned because you somehow persuaded the media outlet to carry your story without paying them. Unearned media, we all, we consider even unearned media is when you have your message and it's you know, it's this poster or it's this video advertisement or audio play, and you pay the media outlet to place it. And I put public service announcements in that because even though you're not paying, you're getting your message the way you want it put into the media outlet. It's an important distinction because earned media always is a shared sense of control. So when you pitch a story to any media outlet, you're persuading them of your point of view, and then they're going to do with it what they think is best for their media outlet or for their readers or viewers. So they'll take your side, and then they're going to look for somebody who has an opposing opinion and talk to them and see how they're going to mix it together for their story. And they, you know, Sandy's going to talk more about this, but when you go the earned media route, you may think, wow, I'm going to get free coverage, but it may not be exactly the kind of coverage that you want. But you get advantage because in earned media, you know, people look at earned media or, you know, the news program content differently than they do ads because they know intuitively the difference between advertisement and program content. Strategies and tactics. If we are setting objective on vaccine safety communication, the strategy is the overall plan we're going to do to reach those objectives. And the tactics are some of the specific things that we're going to talk later on, and I've got in these following slides some examples of tactics. But in your media plan, these are the parts that may be in the plan, the overall, discussing the overall goals, your analysis of the problem, the specific objectives that you want to reach and the audiences that you want to reach, and then your key messages. The media plan would also talk about timing and evaluation and the tactics that you're going to use. So it's important to, the reason we bring up strategy versus tactics is because people have a tendency, when they're thinking about communication, to think about tactics and not about strategy. So you think, wow, we got we've got this vaccine safety concern. If we can just get a PSA and get it placed on the air, then surely that's going to solve it because we'll get our message out there. Or if we just get an article in the paper, surely that's going to do it. When you think from a strategic standpoint of all the possible intermediaries you could use, all the possible media channels that are at your disposal, where the low-hanging fruit are, you know, which of all the people who you want to change the behavior or the attitudes of, which one are going to be easier to persuade than others, and how would you reach them differently? When you approach it from a strategic standpoint and not go straight to your tactical standpoint, you're much more likely to not waste resources with confused tactics. Here's some examples of some strategic approaches. Leveraging scientific evidence to persuade people, foster alliances with other organizations who can carry your message for you and reinforce your message, minimizing the backlash from an announcement that you're expecting or some study that's going to come out. Tactical examples would be developing a media kit to be used to disseminate your message, training spokespersons, a press conference, and meeting with editorial boards. So what I would espouse is when you're thinking about how to plan out your media outreach, take advantage of all your options, earned and unearned media, news programming as well as feature programming, and get the right mix of all these objectives, of all these strategies and tactics to reach your objectives. And I think I'll leave it at that for now. Are there any stories somebody wants to share about how they've strategized for communication around vaccine safety or other vaccine issues or questions about what I've covered? I went kind of fast. Maybe it was confusing. Yes, ma'am. This was the call that coincided with the announcement of the settlement a few weeks ago. few weeks back.
No.
This is another call.
This was another issue.
This was related to the vaccine recall.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
Right.
Yes, ma'am. Other stories to share, or questions or comments? Oh, yes, in the middle.
I guess I'll comment a little bit, because that's true, and I mean, that comment does come up a lot. I mean, I will say that there is a body of health communication research specifically looking at the use of fear appeals, which, you know, at the very least really cautions you about how you use those appeals, and generally says it's not always a great idea, you know, we've certainly delved into that area a little bit ourselves, and, you know, I do think each situation is unique, and to sort of make vaccine-preventable diseases a bit real, to some extent you have to go there, but I guess it's just a cautionary word, and that's why, you know, at CDC we've done so in a very deliberate way. I mean, in one, you'll see one example at the conference if you're here at the closing plenary, where we, you know, and I don't know if Laura or anyone else from Families Fighting Flu is here, but, and I know some of you, like Amy, I think you guys have been working with them a little bit too, perhaps, but, you know, they obviously have very compelling stories to tell about influenza, and, you know, we do know that there is just widespread sort of misperception about what influenza is and how serious it can be, a complete lack of understanding that our audience research has indicated to us. And so we did choose in that case to partner with them and, you know, create this product that we're going to sort of preview at the closing plenary with them. Yes, it is something that, you know, we've definitely talked about, but I guess just an explanation of why we do that kind of cautiously.
I don't know. Did that answer your question? Yeah. Yes? Sandy's going to talk about what you know is newsworthy and what's not. I think the other issue is you know what makes interesting news, and unfortunately, a lot of times you know as compelling as important our issue is, it's not newsworthy.
Right.
It's not very interesting, you know, and we struggle with that all the time. What can you say? You know, vaccines work.
Kid was vaccinated successfully today.
Yeah.
That's not going to make headlines.
Unfortunately. And their story is much more newsworthy. Oh, my gosh. Three hands in the back. You.
Yeah.
Yeah. There, let's not bash the media, because remember their role. We all want the media to do our bidding, but they exist for a reason, and their reason is not always. We have to figure out, and Sandy's going to talk about this. You know, think about why they exist and what their goals are, and how to overlap them with our goals. That's what we're going to talk about after our break. There was a couple more questions down here. Yes. Yeah, but unfortunately, we need somebody to die. You know, like I was on a call with a state recently, and they told me about, well, we had a big pertussis outbreak in this rural county. There were 70 cases, and I bet there aren't more than 12,000 kids up there of pertussis. And it's like, well, you think you get that in news? No, this happens every year. It's not newsworthy. It's just not. It's newsworthy to us. But it's not until somebody dies, it's not newsworthy, unfortunately. Yes, over here.
Yeah,
yes.
And people kind of rushed through it because they want to know about their neighbors and others.
Yes. I when I answered that question, it was more like a big city media outlet that would cover the whole state. It wasn't going to fly. Yes, ma'am.
Is formatted, and I don't know a lot about technical components of this, but it's formatted for the new And so there's more people asking about the ad and considering running the ad because it has that longevity.
Yeah. Want to take two more, and then we're going to go to our break, our required break. Yes.
I'm with the California Public Health Center at House in San Diego, and what I found was interesting, when you have to operate a target, you're making 2 cases a day, and I'm actually calling to explain it to our family. Oh, we're taking legal cases, and they go, how many do you catch? Three, and her cousin said, big deal. Like, we watch so many movies where if you don't have thousands of people dying of this mass destruction, what's the big deal about this story? Like, people just don't get it. I don't know if there's someone we can talk about that after.
We will. We will. Yeah, Sandy, yes.
Just two quick comments. One was newspaper advertising. We found that this should actually pay for placement advertising, which, you know, we can pinpoint where we want that ad to be. So basically, if we're dealing with older population, we know they're going to look at it. I just use that for example. I mean, there may be something near that page, or there may not be.
You have a little icon for flu and pneumonia deaths, you know, and say, could have been prevented with a shot. Yeah. Okay. And Michelle, you got the last word again. No? Okay. So we're going to take a brief break, not a 1 hour break, but a 15 minute break, and then come back with the media training. And if you're not coming back, please get an evaluation form. I'll put them by the door and fill them out before you leave. Thank you.
But come back.
Come back.
Don't be afraid.
This is sad.
on us to fill money. But I've already done this. No, no, no. For this session. I sent it a couple of weeks ago. I just resent the same file. Yeah. Well, no, she hasn't.
That's true.
But I do know that I sent mine a couple of weeks ago. It was the same as the one that I used last time.
You're right, and I should have made
that's
that.
Why
yeah.
I'm mentioning yeah. this disclosure statement.
And the thing, that's right. He's who hired me.
Well, we asked.
That's right. And that's where I started.
Because we have so much content.
You're right, and I should have mentioned the fact that you know people knew that there were those risks associated, but because the disease was so widespread and so feared, they were right. Yes. Well, I mean the pre-licensure trials.
Oh yeah, yeah. I remember you. Nice to meet you. I hope so too.
Yeah, but no, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I didn't frame the, yeah, I should have put a positive frame. They were absolutely good things, yes. Yeah. No, you should have. Don't even hesitate. Occasionally, I do see him around CDC, yes, yeah. He's still there. Makes me sad when I see him, because, you know, I love working for him. For
I'm wondering if this is going to work.
He was definitely a visionary.
No, we were going to start. We're going to start at 3:15.
Well, the 5 to 6 is optional.
It's going to be the
so
meeting on campus.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It was hard to work with the conference organizers because they have sort of, you know, Terrence. It's hard to sort of work it all out, yeah. So we're okay. So we took like the mandatory, we need to take the break, right? Yeah, and then we'll get into the part two. Is that okay?
The taping says kind of
no, I think you can change the signage to part two. Right? You can change the signage to part two. Okay. All right. Thank you. Yeah, in about 15 minutes or so. Yeah. Hopefully people will come back because I know we're doing something. We're changing things up. We'll see how it goes.
They have a light refreshments down the exhibit hall. That would probably make a difference.
Oh, yeah. Right out here? Great. Oh, that's very nice. Good. Okay.
Sure. It's just up in West Virginia.
Oh, okay.
There 2 weeks ago.
I haven't been there since the pan flu, the big, the secretary came and he was going to all the states doing the meetings, and yeah, your governor was there, and so I was there. I know, I know. Okay.
I was watching the news and saw the little episode of the other.
Okay. You're going to be the first one here.
Yes.
We're going to do a mock interview with
not about
okay, I'll be on the camera always.
Well, what if we have no takers?
Oh. You know
what I'm wondering?
You're just going
to
explain, right.
And
he's there, and yeah.
So there's no question. But I was shocked that the CDC took
response. Because you have three other questions that we didn't get on the message.
Was the spokesman there when that happened?
Yes.
Or was that something? Did you have a clue that
was going
to happen? Have him do it right away? Like
right.
Yeah.
Well,
I was
going
to do that. But would you recommend? We could do that right after I do the two message maps so that they can have a little interaction. Yeah. So we could do that. And I've got him here.
Right.
You know, he can be on camera doing a response.
I was just really shocked when I was watching the news in the room and I saw that.
Yeah.
What a setup, because, you know, we were talking on one of the earlier sessions about, you know, how there was such a club and there was no question.
Curtis. Oh, absolutely. Toby was asking, you know, just chatting about.
I work in communication
in West Virginia. So about the speaker thing at the other conference yesterday, and you know how we were able to just be there on the spot, replying and everything so quickly. And did we have? Did we know what was going to go on? That's what I was saying.
Well, I was telling her I was just shocked because I was watching the news. And when I saw that, you know, the lead in the story, I think it was kind of like, you know.
How's it going?
CDC has two conferences going on at the same time and a development, you know, the infectious disease conference. I'm like, regarding TV.
And we're just going, better there than here.
Right. Well, and I was like, oh,
finally, it's not an immunization issue.
Well, and I was just stunned because it was obviously a setup that they were there to even be there for that question, you know, and to interview the gentleman afterwards and whatever. But the question was, I was shocked because the level of bureaucracy that I have to go through to be able to issue a statement. I mean, I provide the talking points because it would be the secretary. Human resources, our secretary, I would have to give her those talking points to put them out. But I couldn't do it that quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I could give her.
We don't always do it that quick.
We don't always.
Yeah.
But I just wondered if you had it, because I gathered with the gentleman. Because there's a good point to say that he left without filing an agreement. And all that. I mean, that's the media center. But so I kind of thought that it was leaving the door open where maybe. I didn't know that you guys knew that he was going to be there. I mean, I know that, you know, who's. Yeah, I mean, I was talking to our program manager.
Take advantage of
it.
Somebody
had a vacation. And I said, yeah, well, we did, because this is the national immunization. Immunization.
We.
Yeah, we had the secretary come to daycare, and we had the media, but before the press, our press office, West Virginia, would allow that, we had a plan if there were protesters there, because there is an organized anti-vaccine group in West Virginia.
Yeah.
So, and they were like, you had to be tight sealed. You know, and so, let's have a good time with what you were doing. They didn't want to put too much information on the stand. They didn't know if they were going to fight them. Just to catch the story.
Yeah. Yeah, local media, you never know.
Right.
One of the scandals that the state employee is seen starting an infectious disease outbreak.
Prior to the direction of the director of the employee host.
I got it. I worked as a news director at a radio station in West Virginia before I switched into the public health.
Oh, okay.
So I was familiar with the other side, but when I heard that, I mean, it just caught my attention, really, and I was thinking, wow, that was a weird response. And you didn't have the bureaucracy. And I know that you have it too. I mean, I know that it's at that level. But,
I
through our program, the way we have it set up, of course, we're in the state government, we have 54 health departments. And so when the court comes, we immediately put together 5 or 6 talking points that we provided to the health department in case there was a parent that would not direct them to go to the media. It was more for a parent than the other parent.
Yeah, well, we're trying to use those to make Chris and a lot of boys at work.
Yes.
And they get it.
But do you advise that?
Oh, yeah.
To
absolutely.
Go ahead and do that now?
Absolutely.
Do
that.
Going to be at the training that's coming up in August.
Do you want me to
hear from the health communicators, media training, and CDC?
Yeah.
Well, which one?
Curtis.
I'm Toby Wagner. I'm really excited about MTSR. That was fascinating because that was my whole life. I mean, still, those kind of schools are that fast.
Secret sale.
On.
Michelle's coming around with the.
I'll have them tell us what it is.
Right. Yeah, okay.
You know, that's what I'll do. That's
great.
Get a volunteer to go to the mic and say.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I think we could have some, and people, I think
just
we're doing.
Make it for
them. Yeah. Is it three? Is it the time?
Yes, it's the time. You just start talking.
Okay.
Including us.
Surprise, surprise.
A very good turnout.
Oh.
Just spread
it's
out.
Such a big room. It's such a real, it would have been nice to have a small room.
Just start talking.
Okay. Anyhow, thank you for coming back. We're going to talk. First of all, I noticed a number of people, it sounds like a number of you have already had a lot of experience working with the media or having some interaction. I wanted to find out who else, by show of hands, have had opportunities to be interviewed or to work with the media or approach them. Wow. That's great. We're going to talk about message mapping and how you can use that to focus your communication efforts. Messages are really the key points that you want to say. They're the heart and soul of your communication. And they, if they're compelling enough, are what will give you the opportunity or optimize your chances for a balanced story. And believe me, if you can get a balanced story, that's incredible because 50% of it is going to be talking about what you want to say or your side of the story. So that would be great. What is a message map? A message map is a roadmap. It's a tool. It's really a visual guide to help you organize your thoughts and think about who your audience is in formulating the answers to questions. Why create questions, message maps, and I'm going to bring this back up. Because they're going to help you, again, respond to the various audiences, thank you, and have and have consistent messages, and they're going to allow everyone in your organization to speak with one voice. So they're really critical. And there are more reasons to message map, and that is what we've been talking about this afternoon. It'll help you overcome the barriers of what is known as mental noise. And mental noise, which is used in crisis communications, is when people are so upset by something or so concerned about something that they can barely hear what you're talking about. So message mapping will help you overcome that because it will help you first empathize with your audience and then come up with very clear, motivating messages that they can hear. And it's a tool also to help you provide accurate messages and effective messages. Meaningful message requirements. First of all, you want three compelling messages. You want three messages because it's very difficult for the public or anybody listening to you to remember any more than three messages. You want them to be the very most important points that you want to make. They should be simple, easy to remember, and if they can be of soundbite caliber, that would be great. You want to have them supported by facts, and you want examples that are really vivid, that are memorable, that people can picture in their minds and kind of get an aha, a revelation, and then that being backed by scientific evidence. There are certain steps to create message maps. First, you want to, again, identify who the audience is that you're talking to. What questions and concerns do they have? And if you don't know those questions and concerns off the bat, you can certainly Google them. You can go on any of the various sites to find out what parents are asking about vaccines, what seniors are asking about flu vaccine. And then you draw, what are the common elements here? What common questions do we have here that I need to respond to? Then you begin to build your messages, and I'm going to show you, you have some examples with you about what the message maps look like. But essentially, they're like three messages across. They're no more than nine, each message is no more than nine words because you don't want to be any longer than 3 seconds or have to be able to say it any longer than it takes to say it in 3 seconds. And then there are columns underneath, and the columns are your supporting facts. They're pretty much, they really are like building up your message. And so let's talk about what you have in hand. The first one is a question that you're bound to be asked, which is, why should children be vaccinated? And if you read across the top, you can see that the first message is very clear and I think very compelling. It's vaccines can save a child's life and protect him or her against permanent disabilities. And for parents that are unaware of what the diseases in the past have caused or could cause, and that hundreds of thousands of children died from measles or they were impaired, they became blind, they had ear infections or some, you know, from other diseases, became deaf or had encephalitis. These are important facts to bring up, and I think they are vivid facts. For example, in supporting fact one, under one, which says, before the measles vaccine, children infected with measles suffered complications such as I said, in ear infections, pneumonia, encephalitis, and many children died from the disease. 500,000 children were infected with measles each year in the United States before the vaccine. And in terms of the polio vaccine, this disease killed 1,900 Americans a year and paralyzed 20,000 Americans. And today, as you know, polio is virtually non-existent. But it was interesting. I was talking about polio in my office. I was talking to one of my colleagues, and I mentioned, one visual example would be to show an iron lung. I mean, there were people that weren't able, they were paralyzed, they couldn't breathe. This may tell you a little bit about my age, but I had a very old cousin that unfortunately did have polio. She survived it. She's fine now. But I said to this colleague, I said, do you know what an iron lung is? And she said, that's probably somebody and this is a really smart woman who has 2 master's degrees. She said it's probably, and she's in her 20s, she said it's probably someone that has really strong lungs. So, and I went around the office asking people in their 20s and 30s, and they didn't know what that meant until I got to somebody that was 40, and they did know what an iron lung was. So it just shows you again that these are messages that can support what your key messages are, to audiences that really don't understand these diseases, weren't around when these diseases were prevalent, and don't know how horrific they were. In the second one, if you go to message two, the question is, are childhood vaccines safe and effective? And here what we're trying to, what we are saying, is that they are carefully monitored, who monitors them, how many, there's so many children that are receiving these vaccines that it's imperative that we look at them closely. There are reporting mechanisms. And then again, we repeat the facts that without these vaccines or before these vaccines, these people were paralyzed, these people died. Some examples that really paint the picture of how terrible it was before we had vaccines. And then I thought, well, we have like three, what we thought we would do is an activity now, which I think you'll find fun. We thought we would ask three questions, and let me get the questions. And we thought that you would actually have a stab at creating your own message maps. And I see some horrified faces. Okay. It's going to be fun. Well, the first one is, are vaccines linked to autism? And we thought the group on the right might collaborate in this effort. The six of you gather together and see if you can come up with some key messages and some supporting messages. And you just write on the back. Well, I don't know if we can write on the back. We need some other paper.
You write on the back of your slide deck.
Uh-huh. And this group, we thought, would answer the question, why do vaccines need chemical additives?
Easy piece of cake.
And this group over here, your question is, why do children need so many vaccines? And what about if we have about 15 minutes, or how much time do we have?
These are hard questions, right?
I know, they're very hard questions, so we may get
it. we're just looking for the top three key messages. Don't worry about the supporting information. And again, like Sandy said, what you hope for is that each key message would be about 10 words or less, to see how difficult that is. Yeah. And also keep in mind the grade level. So, you know, we want to shoot for eighth grade at the most.
Somewhere between sixth and eighth grade would be good.
Sixth grade would be ideal, yeah. And that's really hard. But think about, you know, how would you explain this to a sixth grader? And then one thing, if I could add to what Sandy said, is, you know, if you guys have heard Vincent Covello talk about message mapping, he's sort of the person who's, you know, invented this approach. You know, primacy recency theory tells us that what's said first and last are the things that are remembered most easily, that are recalled by people most easily. So what you want to do is sort of get your three key messages, but then also prioritize them and put the first one first. The most important one first, the least important one second, and then the second most important one last, if you get that. So first, most important one first, least important one second, and then you got your third one. Put that least important point, not that, you know, I'm sure you'll have three points that are all very important, but think about which one is least important, put it in the middle. And then, you know, what I think we'll ask folks to do is if we could get a volunteer, we'll have you sort of report out on your map. And then one other thing I want to throw in about message maps that Vincent Covello talks about is expressions of empathy before you actually launch into your factual key messages don't count against your word count. So you could do that. Just so you know, mm-hmm. in terms of supporting facts and stuff, visuals also don't count against you.
Right.
Just so you have that information. And so, you know, this group in the middle is kind of big. So if you guys want to partner up or just work with whoever's sitting close to you and tackle your question, and then, you know, we might have one or two of you in the middle
tell us what you came up with. And then maybe we can talk a little bit about how to most effectively, you know, actually present your key messages and talk about them a little bit.
I mean, I would suggest that perhaps people in these first three rows begin to collaborate. That will be six of you, and so forth. You know, go back three more rows and get together.
Sounds good.
So that you can, you know, more people working together. I think it'd be more
fun.
And
we'll stop talking now so you can think about your key messages.
And sure. On your section, are vaccines linked to autism?
Thank you. Thank you.
can do a quick sort of report out.
Hey.
Oh, for the part two. Gotcha. Okay. Oh, okay. Thank you. Is there anything else we need to know? Okay. Well, we broke up into little groups and just been doing hands-on activities, so we'll launch into part two.
Yeah?
So let's have the groups just report out.
Okay. Okay, everybody. If the group leader, the leader in each group will prepare to tell us what the key messages are. And believe me, I want to tell you, these are really difficult questions. I mean, we've been struggling to answer these questions.
That's why we gave them to you guys.
So,
to see if you could come up with something better than us, because we struggle too.
Right. So, anyhow, group one, I'm not sure, the gentleman from West Virginia in group one?
Toby.
Oh, Toby. are you the leader? Another leader, okay.
We want to hear what up with.
If you would be kind enough to just, you know, provide the answers to the question. Your question was, are vaccines linked to autism? And it's always a good idea to thank the interviewer for the question and say, well, really, thank you so much for asking that question. Three things we want to say about this, which is kind of also called headlining. But then you go right into your three messages.
You want to play reporter, Sandy?
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you. Group two. Who is the leader in group two?
Well,
we had a couple groups going at the same time. Okay. Let me ask you the question. Why do vaccines need chemical additives? Thank you so much. Can I ask one more question?
Really,
what do you mean fresh? Okay, great.
Germs.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And then the other group who had this question. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I was going to say one thing. I was just going to say, whenever you do have key messages, it's important to do a complete sentence so that the nine words, you know, for example, chemical additives ensure that vaccines are sterile, or ensure that they're not contaminated, or ensure that they're fresh. So it's important to make it a complete sentence. But that's great. Thank you. That's excellent. That's excellent. Yeah, that's very good.
And I just want to make a point about the empathy thing. Don't throw it away and just say, oh, we empathize. You know, for those of you who are parents, when they tell you when you praise your child, you don't just say, good job, Tim. You say, wow, you know, you did a great job on your math homework. I think you could be a brilliant teacher. I mean, give them a reason to empathize. So, you know, parents are concerned about their children. And we share that concern. That's why we look very carefully at how we, you know, and then you tie it in to what you're about to say about the ingredients. I like that a lot. The ingredients in vaccine. So it's not just, oh, well, we learned in the media training you're supposed to empathize. You're going to say, I care.
Just don't mention who they are. Yes.
Well, in the media interview, you got to guess.
Yeah.
And you can guess pretty well where that question is coming from. And, you know, the other things that it ties into in being a parent and being caring about that little child that you've been entrusted with and everything that you do and that child is exposed to, you scrutinize carefully. And you're just doing that here, too. And, you know, these big impersonal government agencies have also done that in their own bureaucratic way to make this safe.
Curtis.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, group three. Hi.
Oh, okay. Patricia, you're off the hook. Yeah. That we were going to talk about that strategy later.
And your question, I'll ask it to you. Why do children need so many vaccines? Right. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. It is time for a break.
Yeah.
About a 10-minute break?
Yep, about 10 minutes.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed that. It's really difficult. You didn't have a lot of the information that you would have needed to build those the columns that support the messages. But I think you all did a great job. Thank you so much.
Sandy, we want to give a preview of what we'll do in the last official hour?
In the last hour, we're actually going to do some mock interviews. So definitely come back for that. And you'll have a chance to role play among yourselves. One person will be the interviewer and one person will be the interviewee. And that's so much fun. I mean, you can be really a hostile one or not so nice. Yes. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not 5 yet?
Well,
oh, okay.
No, I'm teasing.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, what we're going to be doing next is talking about who are the media, tips in terms of how do you pitch a story, how do you reach them, building relationships with the media. I'm sorry, I already was thinking it was 5.
Okay. No such luck. Yeah, and then we'll...
10-minute break.
Let's do 10 minutes. If, you know, take a little bit longer if you need that, but we'll get started again in 10. 10 minutes. Yeah.
Did she take notes so that we don't have to do these messages? Should we tell them that behind?
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't get too far into the weeds.
Two things were, did you hear about when you say anything about using that MMR autism from England that didn't show another causation. I looked at I saw it on the chapter.
That came out yesterday?
Well, I saw it in the chat room. I thought it was yesterday or the day before, but it was in the chat room.
I do. I do know that at NVAC, David Salisbury reported out on a new study. And let's see. I'm trying to remember the dates. The dates of NVAC. No, of course it's good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I already filled yours out, Sam.
Oh, you did?
I was sitting here.
All right.
Because I
get, you know, local and stuff, because we're always trying to be...
Okay.
When things come out, we try to start doing things right away.
Okay.
Yes. I think we do our own fact sheet, because I think we're going to do one on, like, multiple vaccines.
Good.
We don't have one on that.
Yeah.
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 A little bit about when you have the reporter.
A little bit. I mean, I was tired before
the
conference.
Keep asking questions
I'm, I'm perpetually tired.
Yeah.
Okay. He sleeps okay, and my husband's actually very, very good about getting up with him when he does wake
in rare
up.
Situations, that could happen.
3 months.
And then you go back to your key messages. Yeah. Very rare, very, very, very rare situations. That is a potential that could happen. But the reality is that, you know, vaccines are safe, they're effective. And actually, you know, we had put together some talking points for,
well,
you had vaccines linked to autism. You had a really tough one. You had a tough one.
Well,
but yeah, I'll talk about that bridging and blocking.
Okay.
Because that's
because, you know, you can actually totally avoid the question.
Oh, okay.
You know, what I think your audience really is interested
I mean,
is,
I think that the call went pretty well.
I've got a whole bunch, which you can
together
take
together in a hurry.
Bridging and blocking phrases.
Yeah.
And you'll notice if you listen to
and for
you
us
all
in
the
musician
time,
program, we just felt like
and
so
you'll
nice
need
to have this
no
autism expert, you know, answering the questions about mitochondria, like the right person who should be talking about this. Rather than one of our people who shouldn't be, you know. So that made us happy within our program, because Dr. Shuck was there and prepared, but she didn't have to say a word, and it was great. It was refreshing for us. Like, oh, good. Okay, okay, Patricia. Thank you. I'll keep this. Oh no, we figured people would be in and out, and it's sort of structured.
You mean
to allow
that. Somebody said that to them? Oh.
Well, I asked the question, and they said, no, we're not feeling. You know, we want to do a good job. And all that. But yes, it's about the number of papers sold.
And it's also made a lot of ego, filling up, you know, having their article on the front page or being the first one, getting recognition for their
really
story.
Helpful. And, you know, like Sandy said, it just, it can really help ensure everybody's saying the same thing in the same way, and there's that consistency there.
Of course he would know. He has an Arbitron ratings. He knows that.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a bad.
That's their job. That's their, we have to remember, that's their job, but they need you. They need you.
I don't think that's a bad thing to say. My job is to sell papers. My job is to get my get the audience to watch my TV show because they got 600 to pick from.
Right. Right.
I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
No.
But we have fun.
Yeah.
You know, so it's,
but you don't want to even get into that with them. I mean, you really want to.
No, but I mean, in this situation, in this venue, in this learning environment, you know, it's nice to bring it up. Because we know that anyway.
Right. Don't remember that you need them as much as they need you, though. I mean, but it's true. I mean, and their job is to increase ratings. I mean, that is their job. So.
Question
one. Oh, the press secretary? Both. Well, actually, no. I think the talking points. I did. Anything with some congressional hearings. I wrote those. I ghostwrote for him.
How involved are you in the
in it. It depends, you know, well, he trusted me, so he wasn't that involved. He was pretty much a maverick, so he pretty much trusted me. He would look over what I wrote. It was Bob Eckhart from Texas.
Well, the reason why I was
asking is... Let me get back. That seems to really say... He really felt he was representative of the people, and he would speak on behalf of the people. He was an unusual person. So he really listened to them. He spent a lot of time down there, and he, you know, and there were occasions when he felt like he knew better, but for the most part, he really valued what they said. And he would. No, I. I would go to him and say, we need to do blah, blah, blah.
If I could have everyone's attention, please. Jim, Sandy, Jim and Sandy, Jim and Sandy. If I could have everyone's attention as a courtesy for what is scheduled for the rest of the day, I understand that this session should have started promptly at 4 o'clock, regardless of your need to be gracious and allowing individuals to take a break. So if you would please proceed with the disclosure, and we will be just fine. Okay.
Okay. CDC, our planners and our presenters wish to disclose they have no financial interests or other relationships with the manufacturers of commercial products, supplier of commercial services, or commercial supporters, with the exception of James Bender and Sandy Kogan, who are media and communication consultants to the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Presentations will not include any discussion of the unlabeled use of a product or a product under investigational use. Having said that, we'll turn it back over to Sandy to continue the media training.
Okay, great. Are there any newcomers? Are there any newcomers to the group at this point? Hi. Oh, you were here earlier, though, right? Oh. You missed a really fun activity, message mapping. Anyway, we're going to talk next about how to reach the media, how to build relationships with the media, and tips for dealing, interacting with them in an interview. Certainly, first, when reaching the media, you want to have a communication plan, and in that plan, you want to have your messages, of course, which you've already done. And I know you're going to go back home and develop your messages right away, because that's key. Beyond that, you want to identify local media, particularly those that are covering health in the print and broadcast media. Those are the people that you want to talk to, as well as the editors. If you're not able to reach the reporters, you want to talk to the editors and the producers of the programs. You want to know who they are, what do they cover, what do they want. Even, in fact, do they seem to be biased? Are they only writing one side of the story? And then you want to determine your spokesperson. You want to pick someone that is highly focused, someone that is willing to practice and be prepared, someone who is not going to let their ego get out in front of them, who's willing to step aside if it's a topic that they can't answer, and someone that is confident and calm and energetic. And then you want to start building your relationships and establishing your credibility, letting reporters and editors and producers know that you're a resource. If they have a question regarding a story or controversy, that you're available and that you're accessible, and you want to give them your number and other contact information. You also want to figure out what is the news angle here? What makes this story newsworthy? Will this reporter want to cover it? Does it impact my community? And doesn't it impact enough people it will be effective? I'm going to ask you a pop quiz, which is, in understanding the media, who are the media? Do you feel like they are friends or foes? By a raise of hands, how many people think that they're friends?
So you do have some friends in the media. And how many feel like they're opponents or enemies or foes? Nobody? Yes? many foes? Okay. All right. Do you feel like the reporters that you know are interested in helping you? Yes? Okay. Will they kind of say that, or how do you know that they want to help you? Right. Well, definitely they need you as much as you need them. That's totally accurate. Do you feel that you know a lot of reporters that are biased? Yes? Yes. Right. Although, of course, we always hope our journalists are objective. They do have a code of ethics. They're supposed to be objective. But it is true that some media outlets, some media folks are biased, and our work is to convince them or educate them, let them know about the other side of the story. And how important do you all feel the media is as an audience? Is it the most important audience by show of hands? Do you feel it's the most important audience? No? Well, certainly the media, I mean, it's a way, they are the gatekeepers to your other audiences that you really want to get to. But, you know, when you're going for earned media, it's really kind of out of your control because you have, you know, the least amount of, least ability of managing what really is said in the newspaper or on TV. They can take excerpts and out of what you say, misquote you, et cetera. So they are definitely an important audience, but they're not the most important audience. There's certainly other ways of reaching your audiences. What to remember about media? This is a great quote. Treat the media as you would any other watchdog, and never turn your back on them. What do media think of you? Think about this. Do you feel like they think... Do you have some sense that they think that you are too slow in your response or reactive all the time, that you're not being more assertive, you're not in front of the story but always kind of behind it, too bureaucratic, your jargon is government jargon, or even that you're inaccessible? If your answer when you're thinking about this is yes, then certainly, you know, it would be time to make changes. Because you want to change that image. You want to be responsive. You want to be accessible all the time to them. You want to be a resource they can count on. And, you know, if that involves asking to be interviewed, which I encourage you to do, then that should be something you should do. And always, always, you know, be friendly with them, even if you feel they're biased, and be engaging and as helpful as possible. How do you make immunization newsworthy? I've listed a couple of the bullets, some things that you could consider that would make news in your community. Are there disease outbreaks, like in San Diego, a rise in deaths and hospitalizations because of a disease? Is there a new study showing disease or immunization trends, new vaccines, new modes of delivery? And certainly one thing that you want to do always, or as much as possible, is personalize your story. if you can find a parent that whose child dodged a bullet because they received a disease that was preventable by a vaccine, like measles, even polio, then that person would be willing to come forward, then that example is rich. That would be a really vivid example that the media would really be interested in interviewing you and that parent. Or if, God forbid, that child died as a result of getting a disease, that too would be interesting. A lot of parents who are already in organizations are willing to come forward and speak about this because they don't want this to happen to any other parent or child. Delivering your message to the media. You want to consider, like, well, what audience do I want to reach and what's the best way of reaching them? These parents are online all the time. I want to reach them maybe on mommycenter.com, babycenter.com, webmd.com. I want to reach, you know, a particular ethnic group through through radio because I know that that's their preference, or reach them by television on certain shows because I know that they watch television on Saturdays and I know they watch certain programs. There as many avenues as possible that you can reach them is important because, I mean, there's some people, for example, that read a newspaper but only the ads or only the advertorials, or some people only read the editorials or the op-eds page. So think about who you want to reach, and if you know what their preferences are, that's the best avenue to reach them. And then you want to develop, this is an example of actually going to a cartoonist. Here a cartoonist is advocating childhood vaccine. Can you all read that? It says it's a child in a bed, and he says, "I don't believe in monsters, I don't believe in ghosts or the boogeyman, but my parents don't believe in vaccinating. That's what keeps me up awake at night." So that was in the San Diego Tribune during the measles outbreak. And here's an example of someone that you don't really typically think to go to. I mean, you think of editors and you think of producers, but how many of us think of going to a cartoonist to see if they might do a cartoon that would be take your position? This was recently in the Washington Post, and another example of the news media being influenced by the facts. In the Washington Post, can you read that? It says at the bottom, it says, "Autism is a tragic disorder, but no one knows what causes it or even how to test for it biologically. Given how little is known about autism and the fact that no science has been able to connect it to vaccines, parents should continue to protect their children against known preventable risk, the deadly diseases that vaccines keep at bay." Yes. No, that was an editorial. Yeah. So how powerful is that to have an editorial from the Washington Post with the headline, "Keep Vaccinating"? I mean, that's pretty incredible. I would have asked Curtis if he was here, if he was responsible, but I don't know. So that was really recently. The pitch. That's so important. When you're approaching the press, you want to be able to script your pitch, but talk about it. I mean, so when you're talking to a reporter, first of all, it should be no more than 30 seconds because reporters have so little time, then they're usually always on deadline. So you just want a very quick pitch. A lot of people script it, but when you address the reporter, you want to be talking to him or her in a conversational tone. Your starting point is your key message or a news angle, the key information you want to get across, something that he or she will find newsworthy. And of course, you want to start your conversation with stating your name and organization, if this person has time, supporting what you have said with facts, and inviting him or her to interview you. To build and maintain a relationship is, it sounds like many of you have already done that. When you're making the call, you ask the reporter if he's on deadline. If the reporter's on deadline and they pass, you ask if you can call back, offer to be a resource, provide contact information, thank the reporter, and definitely call back. And when you call back, tell the reporter that you have a story that you think their readers, the listeners, or their viewers will be interested in, and give him or her the news angle. And while you're doing that, you weave in your key message. and you provide the facts and scientific data to support your messages. When you're talking to the reporter, definitely be yourself, chat, talk about last night's high school game, or, you know, talk about, you know, college football, what was the weather like. Start to create some kind of relationship and jot down notes. They may mention the names of their kids. So the next time you talk to them, you can say, how's Joshua and Jane? You know, and then arrange a time to talk in the future, and then offer them a fact sheet or a news release. If a journalist is calling you, find out their news or their name and affiliation. You definitely want to know what story they're working on, learn a little bit about what their deadline is, and make sure that you do get back to that person at that time before the deadline. And if it's a TV interview, certainly ask for the location, the format, whether the show is live or taped, and we'll get into the differences of live and taped interviews. Three challenges in interacting with the media are the reporter's unofficial rights, and that's something that I talked to somebody just recently. When they challenge anything you say or write, and ask you like three or four times the same question but in different ways because they really want you to say what they want you to say. But if you return the tables, they'll bristle at that, you know. The other thing they certainly can do and do is put words in your mouth through a leading question. So be very careful when they do that. Listen very carefully to the question, because afterwards, if you see it in print, you know, you could say you swear you didn't say it, and you did. And the reporter can selectively report the facts. And this I'm sure you've heard a dozen times, always tell the truth, and then you don't have to remember what you just said. That's Mark Twain's quote. It's also important in this new media age to build relationship with partners, including the dot-com partners. So certainly for the flu campaign, we had a lot of dot-coms, particularly in the health field. We were partnering with blackdoctor.org. We were able to get mad articles on and dear colleague letters on blackdoctor.org. They have a lot of visitors, thousands of visitors every month. Nursing.com sites, webmd.com. So look to see what .coms might be appealing to the audiences that you're trying to reach. And see if you can post some mats on those or links back to the CDC website or back to your organization. Perception is reality. I know that you've heard that a lot. And truly, it's how you look and how you sound that is more important than what you say. So in a television interview, and even in our print interview, in a television interview, for example, how you appear, if you appear confident, relaxed, certain of what you're saying, you carry a lot more credibility than if you're umming and aahing and slouched and not at all clear about what you're going to say, don't know the messages. The public, the viewers will think, you know, will not think much of what you have to say and not listen to you. And also on radio, you want to be enthusiastic and have high energy, moderate your pace, because they too will be listening to how you sound to see if you sound like you are a credible person. Before you prepare for an interview, you want to anticipate the questions, certainly prepare your responses, memorize your key messages, although if it's a telephone interview or email interview, because those do happen too, you'll have notes with you, hopefully, except for the TV interview. You can look at your notes before you go on television, but not when you're on, obviously. But on any other media, you can have notes with you. Certainly be armed with facts. Know the interviewer. See if you can find out some information about what has he or she written about in the past, what kind of slant does he or she take, what is the publication about, who does it go to, or the show for that matter, and what's your interview format? Are you going to be live or taped? During the interview, treat every question as an opportunity to reiterate your messages. Never say no comment, because that raises a red flag. They immediately think, I can't trust this person, that they being not only the person interviewing you, but people listening to you or watching you. They think, okay, they can't comment,
They must be hiding something. And if you can't comment, explain why you can't and say you'll get back to the reporter with an answer. And if the reporter says, this is off the record, I have a question, nothing's off the record. We wish it were so, but it's not off the record. Sometimes you have a rookie reporter who is confusing off the record with not for attribution, which is, you know, when he could say, a White House official said today, or a representative from the Atlanta Braves said today, not naming you, but alluding to what you do. They can confuse that, but I think the confusion is giving them a little bit more than they deserve sometimes. So don't say anything you don't want to read about or hear about or see. In the media interview, if you can create a message that is a clever soundbite, that's great, but be careful because it can turn against you, because if there are other soundbites in your interview, the reporter or producer will take those other things that sound better and run those throughout the day, and you'll lose the chance to have had your message heard throughout the day. You want to be able to give some historical perspective because we're talking to so many parents who have no knowledge of the diseases, and so you want to put everything into context. As long as your examples are vivid and they paint a picture, then they can actually see that image in their mind and it resonates with them more. So it's important to give vivid, vivid examples. Your attitude is extremely important. I mean, how many times have we seen people that are arrogant or irritated? And you're watching their attitude. You're not even listening to them, and you begin to dislike them immediately. So stay cool and stay in control. This is a journalist lexicon. How many of you want me to go through this, or would you like to review it later? I'm happy to go through it if you're, something on the record is obviously, okay. No? Show of hands. Should I go through the yes? Okay. On the record, you can be quoted directly, so whatever you say, it can be used. On background or not for attribution, again, the reporter can describe you in another way, an official from CDC said, or again, like a White House official, spoke today about, but they can't name you. Off the record, the information is not to be used at all, either on air, online, in the newspaper, but you'll often see that it appears. So avoid that. And deep background is they're trying to bolster the story, they're trying to get more information, so they're just trying to dig deeper. Sometimes that can be dangerous, but you also it can be helpful too. So you want to be able to provide as much information. Please, please, please. Yeah, that's a good example. Terrible. The do's in interacting with the media are, a lot of them are just common sense. You want to be yourself. You want to be calm and consistent. Always honest, confident. Always take the time to pause. I mean, not only for effect, but you want, you know, if you have something important to say, and I don't have that down here, but it also gives you an opportunity to correct any erroneous statements you have made. You always provide facts and evidence and, again, offer really potent examples. You want to keep your answers as simple as possible because the public can remember that more easily. Repeat the messages in, you know, as many times as you can. Take time, again, to answer your question. That's when the pause is important. And use notes, refer to the notes, relax. I mean, some people get so nervous before an interview that there are a couple things that you could do, which is like meditation, deep breathing. Some people just do stretching exercises, anything that will make you feel, you know, that you can take a deep breath and go forward and do a really good interview. And don't be afraid to record the interview. If you're doing, for example, a print interview, this will really make sure that the reporter stays with you and quotes you correctly. Because if he's recording the interview, you just say, well, I'd like to record the interview too. And that's fine. You can do that. And that way, you know, if something appears in the paper and it's erroneous and you call and correct it, you know, you have the recording as well. So don't be afraid to do that. Some don'ts. Never repeat anything that's untrue or off message. Avoid cliches. Don't be negative. Don't do any bashing of people. Don't deviate from your message. Always stay on the message again and again. Circle back and say your messages. Don't rush through your answers and avoid the deadly stall, which is dead air. And that's when the reporter has asked you a question, you've answered it, and then there's just this pregnant pause, this silence, and it's because the reporter really wants you to continue to say something that you don't really want to say. I mean, he's digging for news. He's trying to do his job. So I have an example of a stall, the dangers of falling for the stall. This was on 60 Minutes just a couple weeks ago. It was an interview with Senator Clinton. And the interviewer said, you don't believe that Senator Obama is a Muslim? And she said, of course not. I mean, you know, there's no basis for that. I take him on the basis of what he says. You know, there isn't any reason to doubt that. And the interviewer said, you take Senator Obama at his word that he's not, you don't believe that he's, and he didn't even finish the question. Senator Clinton goes, no, there's nothing to base that on as far as I know. Those five words were repeated by reporters all over the country. In the New York Times, they called it the sleaziest part of her campaign. All she needed to say was an emphatic no. But she filled up the air, and that's one of the things that is so easy to, I mean, you want to do that. I mean, it's so uncomfortable to be in, you know, have the silence, but just let it be and just relax, take a deep breath, and wait for the reporter to ask you another question. Headlining. That's when, actually, we had an example of someone asking, someone came forward, I can't remember who it was telling me about a situation in which a reporter was asking him repeatedly a question that was not an easy question to answer and would have been an entrapment, a potential entrapment. But here's an opportunity where you can mention your messages right straight off the bat, making the most important point, making that the first point that you want to make, and thinking like a journalist. I mean, that would be really scary to a journalist to think that you're also thinking just like he is. Always, again, back your statements with facts and evidence. Some of the phrases that you can use in headlining are the most important thing to remember is, well, I think the real issue is, well, let me tell you, it boils down to three things, and then you say your three messages. And one thing that is key to this discussion is, so those are some of the phrases, if you want to block or bridge during an interview, you don't want to ignore the question, but you don't really need to answer it. I mean, you can really say, well, you know, I really think, and I've got some phrases here too, I really think, again, that your audience would really be interested in knowing blah, 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 or the real issue here is. Because, I mean, there's no constitutional obligation to answer a question. You want to talk about solutions, not problems. And if you can't comment again, explain why you can't and tell the reporter that you'll get back to him or her as soon as possible. And they will appreciate that. Here are some examples of things that you can say. I don't know, but I can tell you, and then go right into your messages. Well, that speaks to a larger point. What your audience really needs to know is vaccines are safe and effective. And the real issue here is, here are some other examples. What's most interesting or what's important to keep in mind is, let me put this in perspective, or just the opposite is true, and give examples. Handling tough questions, with all of these questions, you know, are tough, and you want to begin with empathy, and you want to be really sincere. I mean, it is, you know, they are, you know, parents have real concerns, and it is scary if they think that the vaccines are going to harm their child. So you want to first express your empathy, your concern, that you understand, anticipate any hostile or tough questions, prepare your answers, again, have the facts right in front of you, and desensitize yourself, just like dancers in a performance need to warm up before they perform, or even football players will go around and you see them punching the other guy's helmets and the padding. It's kind of like they're trying to desensitize themselves, they're kind of preparing for the physical pain. Well, this is a way to kind of prepare for any stingers that you're going to get. And another way to do that is to practice with a colleague. Have them be pretty rough, and we're going to probably do some of that today at the end of the session. But have them ask you some pretty tough questions and see how you respond. And notice how you respond. Notice, you know, if you get tense and nervous, irritated, even hostile, which you don't want to ever do. You don't want to feed into that reporter's antagonism. Reiterate your key messages, stay calm and confident, and do not repeat a loaded question in your answer. Just avoid that totally. Media distinctions. You know, print media is different from broadcast media, is different from online media. And always know what kind of media you're going to be interviewed by and where your messages are going to fall. Print media, the reporter is going to be much more knowledgeable, likely much more knowledgeable. It'll be a more detailed, longer interview, so you should be very, very prepared. And even though you're not going to be portrayed in that in terms like, there may be a picture of you, but unlike television where you're on and you want to dress properly, you should come to the interview dressed properly with a proper attitude as well, because that they want to add a little color to the story. They're going to say, you know, if you come to the interview unprepared or not convincing or, you know, in jeans, there's a possibility they'll put that in the story. So certainly come to the interview prepared and again, record the interview. And take time to correct any misstatements that you make. On radio interviews, you have to focus on your sound and your delivery, on how you pace yourself. You want to have high energy, a strong voice, be very enthusiastic, very confident. And then because the audience can't see what you're talking about, you want your examples, again, to be vivid, powerful examples, so they can see it in their mind. It's fine to use notes, and we recommend that you avoid call-in programs because you may be asked questions that you can't answer. You might feel hamstrung, and it can be a dangerous territory to enter. So make sure that you ask whether it's a call-in. In a television interview, your appearance, again, is all important. And we had that chart showing that perception is reality. You want to be able to kind of lean forward, have simple answers, dress well, apply a little makeup, no notes, but definitely look and be confident. And I just want to talk a little bit about new media. There are a number of ways of getting on new media in terms of there are online interviews, chat room interviews. You can post articles that you've written on different .orgs.com sites if you can get permission and partner with these sites. You can blog if that's permissible from your organization. And certainly I would recommend that you monitor blogs, other people's blogs, see what the people are saying out there in your community, in the nation. You can have email campaigns. If you have a partner that has, you know, an extensive listserv, I encourage you to encourage them to, you know, create some kind of paragraph in which you make your statements, make your messages known, and send that out by email. There are e-cards, and you can post PSAs on social video sharing sites like YouTube, MetaCafe, Google Video. TV attitude. Going back to TV, you want to be yourself. You want to talk in a conversational tone. Direct the answers to the interviewer, not to the camera, but to the interviewer, and use appropriate facial expressions. For example, if it's something tragic, you don't want to be, although we encourage people to smile when they're being interviewed, if it's something tragic, you're not going to be smile, but you're going to show that you, on your face, how you feel in your heart. Dressing for TV. Always dress conservatively. The men avoiding small stripes, checks, high contrast, wearing socks to the knees. You know, common sense things about how you want to see people when you see people on television. And another thing that's really kind of fun to do is to, from now on, listen to people on the radio on your way home from work. When you get home and you're watching an interview, see how they handle themselves. And you can learn a lot about what you want to do and what you don't want to do by watching other people being interviewed. It's really interesting. Women also dress conservatively, avoid clunky jewelry, ditch the short skirts, use light makeup, some of those things. On phone interview tips, if you're interviewed remotely, speak distinctly, use notes, certainly keep your messages at hand. Feel like, you know, declutter your office or whatever so that you can really concentrate on what the interviewer is asking you. Make short statements, provide facts. You can elaborate, but only if you're asked to do so, and only briefly. And before and after the interview, these are some things that you should kind of, you know, check off, a checklist. How, you know, before the interview, how do you look? Do you seem relaxed and calm and confident? Are you lively? And then after the interview, kind of, you know, look at your checklist again and say, did I sound friendly enough, engaging enough? How did I sound? And ask colleagues how you looked and sounded too. And likewise for radio, you know, what was my pace like? What should it be like? Certainly lean on those people that you know who will give you some honest answers. And remember that you should always be in control, because it's the questions that don't do the damage, it's the answers. So, any questions? Any comments or experiences that you've had with the media? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, that was a great observation. That, yeah. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Undisclosing information? Well, I mean, you're not allowed to disclose that information. And so I think you have to repeatedly tell tell the reporter that you cannot do that, but you can let them know how, you know, what you've said only. You can't give out the name of the person.
Yeah, we. I mean, CDC gets in the same kind of jam too, where you know we just there are things we just can't disclose, and we just say that and say it again and again if we have to. But and oh well,
right,
yeah, and
right.
They always do.
Right.
We don't ever really need to tell them. They just want to be able to quote us saying it for the most part.
Right.
But
right.
Most of the good health reporters get that.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing the right thing. You can't disclose it, and so you're doing the right thing. Yeah. Any other? Is another question? Yes. If the scientist is dressed in jeans? Only if he's an entertainer,
like,
also
like
on the side.
Like Friday
no.
casual.
You were saying Friday casual, you think it's okay?
I'm asking.
No, I actually think no. I think the scientist should appear in a suit. I think it shows respect for his field and for the reporter and for the format. So, again, unless he's an entertainer on the side, unless it's Matt Damon, no. I think you really
well,
aren't
one
addressed.
Of the things that, you know, at CDC, with our Commission Corps folks are required to wear uniforms if they're on camera doing interviews. And sometimes, you know, we talk about that too, like, oh, they just look so bureaucratic. And so occasionally, depending on the topic, we'll even though we might want the Commission Corps person out there, we might pick the pediatrician instead who's not Commission Corps so that, you know, if it's a topic we feel like we'd rather have, you know, someone less government-looking. So it does weigh into our decisions, too, sometimes.
Any other questions? Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, generally, you know, if you're standing up, doing an interview, I mean, you really should have like one hand, your hands by your side. For men and women, sometimes that's uncomfortable. So if you have a hand, you know, if you have a jacket and you have one hand in your pocket, generally a man will do that and one hand by his side. But, you know, I mean, putting them in front of you or behind you, it looks, certainly behind you, it looks like you're hiding something. So if you can keep them by your side, that's probably the most important, appropriate thing. Connie. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if you can do a 3-second sound bite, you know, we've asked you to do some messages, but if you can turn that into something that has a little bit more pizzazz or it's a little bit more potent in the way the way it's conveyed, then that sound bite will be picked, the media will play that over and over again. So while your messages are important, it's important if you frame them in a way that gives it a little bit more oomph. And it takes some time to work that out so that it's not, the first word that comes to mind is kind of gaudy or inappropriate, but so that it really it says it in a way that's memorable. I mean, I wish we, if we could have sound bites like there's nothing to fear but fear itself, or, you know, JFK's famous words, ask not what your country, those kinds of sound bites. I mean, that's what we remember, and that's why framing your message in a way that's powerful like that will be played over and over again, and the public will hear that and remember it. So work with your messages. Make them a little creative.
Limericks like Anne. Right.
Sing them, yeah.
Well, I mean, again, that's why it's important, like when you go back to the office, you know, next week, to actually formulate some, your messages. You don't know when you're going to get a call or when you need to reach out to reporters. There's a couple. In terms of like reading more about it, is that what you mean, researching it some more? Vincent Crivello has written a lot about message mapping. Yeah. He's a crisis communicator. And you can Google him. You can Google him and find, you know, learn all about message mapping with the templates and everything.
Oh, that's good. I need to Google him.
Covello.
Yes, Covello. First name, Vincent.